everybody helped us out. We still have more to go, Patricio. We've got to make this $3,000 challenge. I don't know if you know about this. This generous, super cool $3,000 super big challenge to help us end the fund drive here. $3,000 challenge from a number of generous donors. And we've had a number of generous donors get us to a point where we just have just over $1,700 left to go on this challenge.
That's amazing. It just shows the support we have here in the community. I've just been hearing all day and all this week through the fund drive how many people find Radio Catskill a vital part of their lives with getting the information and getting the news that they need to function. And if you feel that way, why not be cool and give us a call here, 845-482-4141, or donate online at wjffradio.org.
I will say we've wjffradio.org, 845-482-4141. We heard from all of these folks, basically from 4 o'clock to 5:30, we haven't heard from anybody in actually the last half hour, which is a little surprising. Yeah. So show us that this isn't a stoppage of any kind, that this is just a momentary blip and that we're going to keep this momentum going, because we're going all night here. Patricio, are you going to be here till midnight?
I'm here till midnight. We have such a lineup for tonight starting at 7 p.m. You want to go through it? We have Jason Tugal, Matt Hurtado, Jeff Barnes, Brian Sheehan, Jeff Loeffler. They're all here live tonight to midnight.
Yeah. And those are all live local DJs. They're going to be spinning tunes all night long and looking for your support. So lots of great reasons to donate right now, especially just as we head into the 6 o'clock hour, because we're coming out of the national and international news on All Things Considered. We're heading into the local news on a local edition. We'll have more national news with the daily after that. And then it's our local DJs, music, culture, and lots of fun. All of these things are worth supporting. All of these things need your support, and we need your help to make this challenge. 845-482-4141. That's 845-482-4141. Go to WJFFradio.org.
Yes, give us a call here, 845-482-4141. Or say donate online at WJFFradio.org. We should go into local edition?
Yeah, you ready to get it going?
Let's go to local edition.
All right.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host for this Friday evening, Patricio Robayo. What a Friday it will be, like you just heard. We're looking to end the fun drive tonight at midnight, and such a great lineup we're going to have here live in studio. Like I said before, Jason Tugal, Matt Hurtado, Jeff Barnes, Brian Sheehan, Jeff Loeffler, right here live in the studio, along with Jason Dole, Patricio Robayo, everyone else. It's going to be a fun night tonight. Listen, and also stay tuned to social media. We'll have some live feeds happening on social media. So, like I said, I love hearing all the support that we have been hearing throughout the week, and especially today, people find the station such a vital part of their lives. So if you feel the same way, please support Radio Catskill with a gift today. Help us keep our community informed and inspired. Give us a call here at 845-482-4141 or donate online at wjffradio.org. So we have a full program for you in the second half of the show. Reporter Nicole Chen will talk about a new report from the Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress that looks closely at the income data about people who moved in and out of our region. But first, it's Friday, and every Friday we check in with the one and only Chris Rowley to find out what's happening in Ellenville and Ulster County. Chris, welcome back to the show. We have some news coming out of some planning boards this week. What can you tell us?
This week's Ellenville Planning Board meeting had an appearance by Eli Wigotsky, who is a builder and a landlord and a lot of properties and things up and down the Rondell Valley. Anyway, he's proposing to refurbish a pair of buildings in the village of Ellen on Water Street that apparently have been out of use, abandoned pretty much, for at least 30 years, possibly 40. He's going to convert those buildings. First of all, he's going to take them right back to the walls, and then he's going to convert them into 7 apartments. That's in a time when we're so short of rental properties. That was really great news, very encouraging. And while he has some work to do on his site plan, because there are many details that have to be got correct on a site plan. And I think he will get to it. He does seem to have kind of an engineering background. The thrust of this is terrific, to take pretty much abandoned buildings in the village and bring them back and create apartments. That was really encouraging to see. Yeah, it was a surprise to me. I didn't know about this, so it was good to see that. So that was Elland Planning Board. It's been a week of planning boards. I also did the Town of Rochester Planning Board. There was an interesting battle there, which is not settled. It's in court. Okay, so there's a little organic farm called Hudson Valley Heirloom Farm. People who know about it rave about it, and they stop by all summer to get produce and goods and stuff from this farm, which is run by a guy called Jason. What's his second name? Jason. I'll find it in a moment. But anyway, he and his lady, Carolyn, are producing great vegetables, great produce. However, their farm, which is down on long farm land, but it was vacant for a while, is close to the Rondout Creek and off of Lucas Turnpike. However, the road that connects to Lucas Turnpike is actually a driveway for another property. And that property has been bought recently by a gentleman who has a woodworking business. And he doesn't care for a constant tide of cars and trucks and vehicles going up and down right past his shop to the farm. Okay, said it has a right of way, come up with any paper to back that up. There's nothing legal to it. It's a customary use. And somebody came on to the discussion at the planning board in Rochester to say that that customary use is at least 100 years old and probably longer. There's always been a farm down there that people from one farming family or another always used to go up and down on that road, which became a driveway, and it was just a customary. Nobody was really worried about it, but now they are, because the gentleman, Mr. Banner, who owns the woodworking shop, he is demanding that they stop using his driveway. That's now a case in court. Now, Mr. Banner has a legal right. He has a legal paper filed with the county clerk in Kingston. By everything in the right of law, he owns it. The customary use is something that a judge will have to decide whether or not can be allowed. And so that's in court. And this is that age-old contest between customary use and rights granted by law and pieces of paper with stamps and signatures and those sort of things on them. And it was very interesting to see this, because here we are in the 21st century, at this kind of struggle. Anybody who studies economic history and all that, you'll be familiar with this, because this goes right back to the 14th century. It goes back to peasants losing their strips of land on the manorial free field system because they didn't have anything except customary right to the usage. And you know, Lord of the Manor, the Abbey, whatever all owned the land, decided to junk all that and go for sheep instead and get rid of the peasants and bring in sheep and produce wool, which made them a lot of money. They could do it, and you could even go to the kind of primitive parliament of those days and get a law actually passed just for them, just for that. So it's that struggle between customary use and law, and here it is still going on, 21st century, Town of Rochester, over poor old heirloom farm. So we'll see how that works out, but I thought that was an interesting little struggle.
Yeah.
Anyway, so while those struggles are going on the major side, okay, we do have the issue of the UCR plan proposal, put it that way, for a landfill in Wawarsa. There's a couple of sites that they have identified as being potentially the best sites in Ulster County. Looking at the two of them, the one that I think is most likely is the one that's in Dairyland, off Route 52 near Milk Road. Anyway, one aspect of all of that is that Ulster County currently sends 140,000 tons a year of garbage to Seneca Meadows, which is a very large landfill in Seneca Falls at the top end of Seneca Lake. So quite a ways to go. There's a lot of energy expended just taking it there. And the likelihood is that Seneca Meadows could be shut even next year, I know that the Democrats in Seneca Falls would do that if they can get one more seat and therefore get the majority on that board. They would bring back a law they passed in 2016, I understand, and close it. Now, that would almost immediately go straight into court. The Texas company that owns Seneca Meadows would fight it all the way. But that's the kind of thing that's going on. And Seneca Meadows has a permit that will run out, I believe, by 2040 anyway. It may be shut before then, in which case every jurisdiction that sends waste and garbage or whatever to there has got to start thinking about what they're going to do. One of the things people do bring up is, what about burning it? What about an incinerator? And I've discovered a very interesting article by Brian Cronin in The Current. And Mr. Cronin has really done the work. He's got some terrific research here. It's the sort of article that one would love to write, but for a weekly newspaper like the Shangum Journal, let me assure you, there is no time. I don't have the time to be able to dig in and really get to it. I have to do things quick and come back to them again and again, but that's all we can do at a weekly. But with The Current, he's got a lot more time. And he worked on this, and it's really terrific. And he makes some very interesting points. There's an incinerator in just south of Poughkeepsie, which gets through about, I don't know, it produces electricity. It's a waste-to-energy site, and it gets through a lot of garbage, but also emits a lot of carbon dioxide, greenhouse gases, about 40,000 tons a year. Along with that, it releases the sort of toxic stuff that goes into our garbage. Now, if the temperature in an incinerator is maintained high enough, a lot of the plastics and everything will just be gone. But some plastics are really tough that way. And if they're not enough temperature, you get some pretty evil stuff in the smoke. And of course, with that, you get lead, cadmium, mercury, which you nobody really wants, but you use them over and over in industrial processes that create the things that go into the garbage. It's one of these issues that's cheaper and more convenient to use plastic than other materials, and our industries are addicted to that because their products become more easy to ship because it's lightweight, and blah, 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 blah. However, there's an end use, and that end-use cost is the landfill or the incinerator. If you're going to do an incinerator, I don't think a new incinerator is going to get an approval in New York State. My sense of it is, with current technology, it's very unlikely to happen.
And now that the New York State has the zero emissions climate goals, and this will be counterintuitive.
Absolutely. Unless the things that jumped out from Mr. Cronin's article was this paragraph: the Peekskill and Poughkeepsie incinerators, which have been operating for more than 30 years, get more expensive and less efficient over time. This happens with every incinerator. For every 100 pounds of trash burned, 30 pounds of toxic ash is produced, and that has to go to a landfill. And sometimes that will require special permits for the landfill because of the lead, the cadmium, the mercury, and so on. You're burning it, you're still ending up with something that's really toxic. There's little political will or popular support for new landfills, but incinerators just bring another set of problems. How are we going to deal with this? How are we going to have to do something? One option is to go back to and some people might say more primitive, a way to package the goods that we use on a daily basis. Instead of big plastic bottles full of Coke, little bottles, glass bottles full of Coke, and then you have to recycle them. Of course, the distributors of Coke and other soft drinks and beer and everything else, they're not really crazy about that. That's not their idea. And that's not their ideal because it imposes a cost on them, on their production. They have to put it into their pricing. But on the other hand, by just doing it all in plastic, they're shooting that cost onto the consumers, onto the taxpayers, onto the people who are going to ultimately have to pay. So it's one of these things that's either or. What are we going to do? And we're going to have to make decisions fairly soon about this, because Seneca Meadows could close next year, or will close at least within the next 15. Got to be done. And to get a landfill set up in Ulster County or Sullivan County, to get a modern landfill going with everything proper, which you need for about 110 acres of land to do it properly, the permitting will take 10 years. Getting started now on getting permits for it is essential. And of course, it's a political decision nobody wants to make. Nobody wants to be attached to this because they're going to be diehard people who will oppose it till their last dying breath. And I can understand that. But then there'll be other people saying, go for the incinerator, which they can't have. And other people will be saying, let's ship it to Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania will say, no, fairly quickly. It's going to be one of those things. We're going to have it's going to be a contest of like musical chairs. Where are we going to end up sending Ulster County? It's 140,000 tons of garbage. Can we reduce that? What can we get it down to if all the industries were cooperative and everything was put out in cardboard or biodegradable coverings and plastic, no plastic, biodegradable packaging? Maybe we could reduce it all and get it to a much easier, lesser amount that we can deal with. But this is the sort of political issue that is coming, and we're going to have to deal with it. I was very interested in this article. I recommend it if you can find it. Brian Cronin in the Current, have a look for it. And I'm sure it's a story that I'll be coming back to. Most Ulster County media will be returning to it because this has to be done. There's either going to be a landfill or there isn't. If there isn't going to be a landfill, what's the solution? What are we going to do with 140,000 tons of garbage?
Yeah, it's an ongoing issue that I think we're all, like you said before, we're all dealing with. And it's a wait and see what happens. Like you said, like you mentioned before, incinerating, I don't think is going to be an option going forward anymore. And we talked about in the past, like, the harm that does to the environment long term, because some of those things, like I used to live in the Bronx, and I remember the landfill that was near us by Pelham Bay Park, to this day, are still fires burning deep below, because this stuff lasts forever.
Whoa. Yeah, there you go. There's that issue. Okay, so it'd be a very different way of life. We wouldn't have, we've already got rid of the plastic shopping bags, and everybody carries a reusable bag around with them. That's one step. Could we go back to little paper bags for small purchases, maybe takeaway food items, things like that? Can we get rid of the polyethylene clamshell things, the plastic clamshell things? Surely that has to go. The industry will hate it, but something will have to come in that replaces it that's biodegradable, that can just be collapsed, go to a landfill, and disappear after a while, whereas the plastic stuff will be there for geologists of the far future to examine in the rocks. So we have to find ways to cut that off. And it'll be a political battle all the way because the plastics industry is enormous. I read somewhere that we are now producing about 470 million tons a year of plastics. That's planet-wide, that's a fairly sizable chunk. That's got to be reduced. We're going to have to find ways to get out of that much plastic. It's already littering the land, littering the ocean, whatever. Right? We're not very good at not littering. That's another story. But why is it that it seems socially acceptable for people to drive along just throwing stuff out the window of the car? What is that about?
No, in the summer, that's why we have these litter plucks in these rural counties, because of that. People throw stuff on the side of the roads, things like that.
Anyway, so that's about this week. And next week, I'm not sure what we're going to be talking about, but there'll be something else, because that's what happens on a weekly newspaper.
Chris, as always, thank you so much for telling us what's happening in Ellenville and Ulster County. And until next week, we'll who knows what the news will be for next week. That's always the exciting thing about news. So we'll talk to you again next week, Chris. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Thank you so much, Chris, for that. And we'll be right back with more news from our reporter, Nicole Chen, about the Pattern for Progress report that came out recently, and tells about who has moved in and who's moved out from our area. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
So many of your fellow listeners have done their part to keep Radio Catskill on air for everyone.
I like Radio Catskill, and I like all that you guys do for the community.
The station has local interest, and I really do appreciate that.
I like all of it. I do believe in supporting public radio.
received if you donated to our summer fun drive. Thank you so much. And if you haven't donated yet, give now at WJFFradio.org to get us over the finish line.
Welcome back to the Local Edition, NPR station for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. That's right, the Summer Fun Drive is ending tonight. We would like to end it tonight. You can make that happen by giving us a call here at 845-482-4141 or donate online at WJFFradio.org. 4 years ago, New York City dwellers fled upstate in the early days of COVID, driving up housing prices in the Catskills and the Hudson Valley. A new report from the Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress looks closely at the income data about people who've moved in and out of our region in that time period, and ways in which this migration changed the Hudson Valley. Reporter Nicole Chen spoke to Adam Bosch, one of the researchers behind the study.
Let's take it back to the year 2020. It was just the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, and the Hudson Valley was receiving a wave of people leaving New York City who were newly able to work remotely and hoped to escape the dense city. The Hudson Valley had a net gain in population that year, after 24 consecutive years of losing residents. But a new report based on data from the IRS shows that the population gain didn't stick. Between 2021 and 2022, vaccines were introduced, mask mandates began to ease, and schools transitioned out of remote learning. In this time period, nearly 98,000 people moved into the Hudson Valley, while over 110,000 people moved out. And this population loss raises concerns.
Our region has lost a net number of people to domestic migration for 25 out of the past 26 years. And when you add that up, we've lost about 145,000 people because more people have moved out of our region than into it. Now, that has a lot of ramifications on workforce, on schools, on, you know, the good function of private and public businesses.
That's Adam Bosch, the president of Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress, the nonprofit behind the report. With a lower and older population, it's harder for employers to find workers, and with fewer students, some school districts have been forced to shut down their buildings, the report points out. And not only did residents leave the Hudson Valley, but the types of people who were living in the Hudson Valley changed.
Our region is becoming a much greater proportion of metropolitan area expats, right? Sort of traditional long-time residents are going. One of the things we saw during the pandemic especially is that in certain counties, Sullivan County, Ulster, Columbia, Greene, Dutchess, the gap between the income of people moving in and moving out was very big. So for instance, in Sullivan County during the heart of the pandemic, the typical family moving in was making somewhere around $90,000 to $95,000. And the typical family moving out was making somewhere around $60,000 to $65,000.
With more people moving in than out in 2020, Sullivan County had a net gain of $96.1 million in income. In the next year, Sullivan County's population decreased. More people moved out than in. Yet despite losing residents, the county still had a net gain of $11.2 million in income. And it's not just Sullivan. Five of nine counties in the Hudson Valley gained income despite losing population between 2021 and 2022.
What it also signals to us is that a segment of like the traditional working class, the traditional blue-collar service workers, are leaving the region and being replaced by people who have higher incomes. And that is a signal of gentrification. So there are some things where an influx of more wealthy households can be a good thing. And now you have more people in your county with expendable income, and they can go out and patronize local businesses and spend money on restaurants and furniture and entertainment experiences. They're more able to pay tax bills. They might open businesses, right, in the local communities. But the influx of more wealthy households can also cause some real challenges in our neighborhood. So, for example, one of the things we saw during this time is the influx of wealth pushed up and up and up the cost of home ownership and rent. So Sullivan County was the only county in the entire region that saw its median home price go up by more than double. Well, that's not great, right? Because then it means that home ownership is farther out of reach for middle-class families that typically would have been trying to attain home ownership, right? So that's a downside of gentrification.
In 2019, the median home price in Sullivan County was a little over $141,000. By 2021, it had increased to $245,000. And in 2023, the median home price in the county was $280,000. This is according to another pattern study which examined the regional housing market. It's important to keep in mind the migration data pattern analyzed were from 2021 and 2022. Bosch says that when the IRS releases data from 2023 to 2024, pattern will really get to analyze the longer-term impact of pandemic-era migration.
The big question this time around post-pandemic is, does remote work change the ability of people who came here to stay, right? It seems to us very likely that a larger proportion of the people who came here during the pandemic will stay. But we'll only know for sure how the additional years of data come out and truly show us what happened in the post-pandemic period.
But even as they wait for more recent data, the researchers at Pattern say that the report provides, quote, irrefutable evidence of gentrification for some of our most rural towns and small cities.
So as that gap widens and as that tension builds as a result of gentrification, what it does is it puts a lot of pressure on policymakers, on lawmakers, on local elected officials to really think about the laws and policies they could and should enact to make sure that we have progress without displacement.
That was Adam Bosch, the president of Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress. From Liberty, it's Jatia Nicole Chen for Radio Catskill.
Thank you so much, Nicole, for that report. But the fun isn't over yet. We're still in our fun drive. We want to end it tonight. Give us a call here, 845-482-4141, or donate online at wjffradio.org. Jason, we have a great show lineup for tonight, right?
We do, but just first I want to remind people about this challenge we're trying to meet, and we want to thank Marion Kashekton, who made a donation during the local edition, and now we've got just $1,500. We got to the halfway point of this fun, of this challenge, 845-482-4141, and we also want to thank Charlotte from Himinen Architecture. Charlotte from Himinen Architecture in Parksville, thank you so much. And now, look at that. Now we've got less than $1,500 to go towards this challenge. We're trying to raise $3,000, a big $3,000 challenge. And also we want to say a big thanks to one of our generous challengers calling in the middle of the local edition, Jay Quaintance, to say how much he loves the local edition. Said whether it's Jason hosting or Patricio hosting, this show rocks. So big thanks to Jay.
Thank you so much, Jay. That's it. If you feel the same way, give us a call back here. And, you know, one thing I like about the Fun Drive is we hear back from so many people from the community. And like, just like Jay said, you know, we find out how important it is to their lives. So that, to me, that makes me feel great. I'm sure it makes you, Jason, feels great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is a great addition to our local radio station here.
Yeah. And the community too, what we do in the community. It's amazing to me that we have these two daily local news talk shows right here coming out of Sullivan County in the Catskills, serving Northeast Pennsylvania, Hudson Valley, wherever you are that you listen to us. We are your public radio station. We thank you for that. We just want you to make it official by supporting a station and helping us meet this challenge now. Call now, 845-482-4141. That's 845-482-4141. We're about to get into the daily. And then we've got 5 hours of local DJs lined up. Jason Tuga on the mixtape at 7. Matt Hurtado from Virtual Soundscapes and Jeff Barnes from Electric Mountain in the 8 o'clock hour filling in for Rare Pair Radio. Then we've got Brian Sheehan for The Secret Show at 9. Jeff Loeffler, 2 hours of The Deep End here in our studios all live tonight going until midnight, looking for your support and trying to make this challenge. Go to WJFFradio.org to donate now.
It's going to be a party, so stay tuned. today's coming up for you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Local Edition. As I said, give us a call here, 845-482-4141, or donate online at wjffradio.org. Everyone else, have a good night. Stay tuned. Lucy, have a good night. And we'll talk to you again next week.